With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, our front nine has our co-host back. Michael back with us to talk about all the craziness in golf. John Rahm to live winners getting wins overseas, no agreement in sight, and the future of golf fandom big time in question. We get into all that, plus what's going on in the world of golf outside of the PGA and LIV. This week's featured guest is NFL veteran Cedric Griffin. That's right, he won a national championship here at the University of Texas in Austin in 2005. He played 7 years in the league. He's got amazing stories from his career and an interesting post-NFL career in the world of barbecue as well. And when we always end with food, it's a date night recap, and we're talking latkes in honor of the season. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. Mike just got on the horn with Desert Fox Golf recently. We'll be seeing them soon at the PGA show in January in Orlando to top off the business year as we always do. Desert Fox has been a longtime partner, not only of the show, but of our content. We love the guys there, and we support all the great products they make for golfers, from the phone caddy, the swing aid tumbler, the cigar holder, and everything else you can get at desertfoxgolf.com. They are not only a great gift right now for the holiday golfer in your life that you need to shop for, but they are also great for large-scale golf events. So if you're planning a golf event next year, or you have a member guest or a fun event in your club that you think needs some really cool swag in their swag bags, be sure to hit us up on Instagram. Just send us a message at COL Podcast with the event info. We'll take care of the rest to connect you and the event to the Desert Fox team. And if that event happens and they book Desert Fox golf gear, you get a cash referral. That's right, a cash referral just for telling us about a future golf event. Again, DM us at COL Podcast. And thanks again to our friends at Desert Fox Golf.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and the Live Take app. I'm Michael. He's Alex. I'm back, Alex. Big thank you to Elizabeth Diane Veith for filling in for me last week as I was unavailable. She's going to be on the bench for whenever we need someone. Someone's going to be out for a while. So glad to see that she's well, more than capable to fill my shoes, and is significantly more knowledgeable than I am.
She's absolutely the official, unofficial third mic of the show. We love having her on. She's always great for us in plan or in a pinch. We appreciate having her on. She gave some great takes too. And last week was just like the tip of the iceberg for the drama that was about to hit the world of golf. We really got into a lot of nastiness in the world of golf right now. Let's just say that.
That's true. Hanukkah came early for John Rahm.
Well said. Nice transition there.
Got somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 to $600 million to go back on every single thing he said over the course of the year about how horrible LIV was, how horrible the format was, how great the PGA Tour is, how legacy is important. And he said, I am going to put on this LIV letter jacket and put on a face and take my money and go to the bank and give my family eons of security, thanks to dirty oil money from the Saudi Arabians. How do we think John Rahm came to this moment? Which, by the way, it looks like he said on the John McAfee show that this was simply a business decision.
Oh yeah, there was business involved, especially when you have all those zeros, and it's just that annoying thing that I hate to say that becomes more and more true with every day I get older, is that everyone has a number. Everyone has a price where they will throw their morals and their obligations or anything they believe formally out the door. And John Rahm was proof of that. Like you said, just going back on everything he'd said in prior press conferences about not being interested in LIV, the format, the tour, where his history and legacy is in the PGA Tour. He was a hypocrite with all of that. Absolutely. And it's just another gigantic domino here in the separation, which feels like a continuation of a separation. We talked about that moment when suddenly, you know, Jay Monahan and MBS were talking about a LIV merger with the PGA Tour. But I still feel like we're continually getting more and more separate between the PGA Tour and LIV as the weeks and months go on.
Yeah, this is particularly interesting because, of course, when they originally announced this the framework agreement, they also said that they weren't LIV wasn't going to poach, and LIV was going to drop the everyone was going to drop their lawsuits.
Right. Yep.
And then they dropped that anti-poaching agreement because that was kind of very antitrust, and they didn't want the courts to get involved. But you would think that LIV would still be like, you know what, we're just not going to do it anyway. But here they are doing this, and this gives LIV so much leverage,
so much
over the PGA Tour now. It's
top
it's
three golfer in the world in the prime of his career,
just the reigning Masters champion, and so much so that even Rory McIlroy just came out and said that they need to change the rules of the Ryder Cup to make sure John Rahm plays.
Rory, I mean, Rory, for his loyalty to the PGA Tour,
I know.
Rory has also had takes that have now gone in seven different directions on his own. He doesn't even know what to think anymore.
I feel so bad. Out of everybody in all of this, I feel the worst for Rory McIlroy because he went from the poster. He went from the acting commissioner of the PGA Tour to, you know, I feel like what they did to him is they took a bag of shit and lit it on fire and left it at his door.
Yeah.
And did a ding and ditch.
Got served a bad plate of that for sure. And he's all up in the news coverage as a result because of him being one of those affirmative and aforementioned voices of the PGA Tour. The whole thing has been quite the mess indeed. As for circling back where Rahm may have gotten influence, the two names that come to my mind that have been LIV advocates pretty much since the beginning, Phil Mickelson, Mike, don't forget Phil Mickelson's brother, Tim, was John Rahm's college coach. A lot of Arizona connection there. And we can't forget that Spanish connection. Sergio and John Rahm are as close as they've been for years, and they've known each other forever. So he had those two guys in his ear definitely to help push him over the edge.
Yeah, it's I'm, you know, still upset at how all of this is playing out, but I think I'm quickly becoming part of the minority in this, it seems, and let probably, you know, we'll see where all this goes. Because my first question when I saw this is did this mean LIV and the PGA Tour deal is dead? But it doesn't seem like it is. PGA Tour also lost Wells Fargo as a sponsor after
that's
what, 30
one.
Years for the Wells Fargo Championship. So that's gone. But the PGA Tour did announce that they're going to be moving forward with that new group of investors as a third kind of a third wheel.
Not sketchy at all, right?
Yeah, with PIF. So you're going to have the Saudis, and you're going to have a whole bunch of people, including John Henry and Fenway Sports, including Arthur Blank, who's the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, including the owner of the Mets as well, is in this group. So you got a very interesting group of American sport ownerships getting in bed with the PIF and trying to get the PGA Tour's assets in their back pockets here. So
definitely, yeah. And there's kind of more confusion that's amassed in the last couple of weeks because we've now seen on international level exemptions given out to some current LIV players who have taken advantage when you were gone. Joaquin Niemann won down in Australia, going to boost his world ranking a ton, maybe get him into a lot more events that he wasn't in prior. Louis Oosthuizen just won in South Africa. So while these doors are closing in some spots, they're also opening for LIV players to get themselves back in the rotation. And the bottom line of this all, Mike, is, you know who isn't getting talked about at all is us, the fan, the consumers of this game that have been watching week in and week out for years and decades of our lives. I just speaking more boldly beyond the politics of it all, the future right now for golf fans who enjoy watching the professional game through television or any platform is very, very grim at this exact moment right now.
Yeah. What scares me to a certain extent is that if you're going to have all this money pumped into the PGA Tour, how do you make it profitable? And does that mean that we start seeing more ads on golf telecasts? Do we see more pay to watch of golf?
Yeah.
ticket prices go up at events, because again, Wells Fargo is out because they said they don't want to pay for this larger event pool that they're now being asked to do because the sponsors are the ones having to pump more cash into the winner's take.
Yeah.
So, you know, how is this model going to be sustainable is kind of the question I'm starting to have as all these dominoes start falling for good or for bad.
And like the future years of golf, just in general on TV, what's this all going to look like? I mean, mm-hmm. for an analogy crossing sports, Mike, this is as if, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and Josh Allen all decided to get up and go play in a random football league that also was on Sundays.
The XFL. Yeah,
it's just like you couldn't possibly fracture the professional game more right now. Do majors mean less because of people that aren't in fields? Do live events mean more or less, or do we not care? I don't even know right now at this point. The bottom line is that we're just splitting this game off into two very, very fractured pieces. And, you know, while there's this quote unquote agreement in place, we're not seeing any of it come to fruition at all.
Yeah, you know, the next few weeks is going to be it's going to be a firecracker going off as they reach the end of their window here. They said by the end of December kind of a hard deadline for this deal to happen. And it seems like there's been a lot of feet dragging. We've heard a lot about Patrick Cantlay having his hand on the button for a lot of what's been going on, a supposed $100 million pool, right? Or $1 billion pool to make the PGA Tour players whole again, I think was the number. I'm forgetting what it was, but it was massive. Of this, like, we're going to make the PGA Tour guys who didn't go to live whole by having this huge pool of money. Of course, Rory dropped out of the player advisory board. So maybe, you know, he saw that he wasn't going to win anymore. He said it was because of family and professional commitments. But I think Rory left because he was betrayed. So,
and exhausted. Yep.
And exhausted. It was just like, this is enough. Patrick Cantlay can do what he wants, whatever. So it's just, you know, so many questions over the next few weeks as we wrap up the season, as if the holiday season isn't stressful enough, Alex.
Right. I know. They're dropping all this in December, which is usually pretty quiet. I mean, and here I am going to transition to a little fun hit and giggle in Naples, Florida. But that was pretty much all that was going on this past weekend. But I need to highlight it because of what it is. While we're at this crappy divide right now in the game of golf, one thing that you and I have been pitching forever is,
forever,
for Christ's sake, can the LPGA and the PGA Tour put something together where men and women are out there playing at the exact same time, the best golf in the world? This is the first step in the right direction, this Grant Thornton shootout, reimagining the format to have a LPGA player and a PGA player playing side by side in a two-person team. It is exactly the kind of stuff that we would like to see grow the game professionally in a few years.
Yes. I mean, obviously what I really want is a Ryder Cup style LPGA, PGA Tour, DP World Tour, just put them all together out there and have a team with men and women on it playing together. And that's what we want to see. Really. That's what I want. But this was the next best thing. And Lydia Ko and Jason Day to the rescue.
Indeed. Yeah. The ladies know this course very well. I've been there. This is where they have the CME, their season ending event in November, to determine the big prize pool. So a few weeks later, they re-tee it up with the boys here, and it's a really cool format. Neat to see Ricky Fowler and Lexi Thompson playing together. Definitely brought some galleries out for sure. And just the idea that we can have the best women and the best men teeing it up side by side. We've been beating this drum for years, but this needs to be a mid-season counts for real event, both on the LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour. We have 80 PGA Tour players, 80 LPGA players. You can make your pairings with your friends, or you can just get paired up, just like they do in the Zurich Classic. That would be a home run event that's got to come to the game of golf in the near future.
I don't know why they're dragging their feet on this. I really don't.
It's right there. I've laid it all out for you. We've already done it in smaller iterations. It's on the tip of everyone's nose right now.
We know how to do it. We just need a course to do it. And you know where it would be great to do this in the fall, before the end of the season? Augusta.
Yes.
And keep that bringing would be it up. Nice. Get the women at Augusta. I think there should be a women's fall Masters because we've seen how gorgeous it is there in the fall with all the leaves changing color. You need to make it happen, Augusta. You need to make it happen. That's the other thing I want. I want an official PGA Tour, LPGA Tour event, and I want an official LPGA event at Augusta.
That's the yin and yang of the golf world right now. Little picture, things are cruddy and we don't know what the future is. Big picture, there's some exciting things coming around the corner.
That's right. Let's talk about YouTube, because if you played 18 holes at TPC Sawgrass on a simulator, mind you, on a simulator.
That finish? I'm not going to give it away, but my buddy Anthony had an unbelievable finish. And I mean, what better holes to do it than 17 and 18 at Sawgrass, right?
Better than most is all I'll say. Indeed. Better than most.
Yeah, that was last week's video. This week, we're doing. I'm starting a little mini series within the channel. Be sure to subscribe on YouTube. If you're a video watcher, you'll see our content by now. But subscribe to Course of Life Podcast on YouTube. I'm calling it Texas Towns, Mike. There's so many little towns here in Central Texas that are within a drive of Austin, where I am, where you can see some really cool stuff. And you can see some interesting golf-related stuff. So this is the first installation of that in Lago Vista. And to tease, not only are we golfing, not only are we eating barbecue and Tex-Mex fusion, but we're playing slot machines in Texas. It doesn't get any more random than that. Yeah, you might wonder how that's even legal. Well, you're gonna have to tune in and find out later this week.
The PGA Tour has another little hit and giggle event going on, but the one I want to touch on first, Alex, actually, is the final stage of Q School.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because this is where, you know, this, I don't know why this doesn't get more coverage and why we don't get this on the networks and everything, because this is where the drama happens, because this is where that missed 2-foot putt costs you everything, literally everything.
Jobs on the line at Q School every year, big time.
So they'll be doing the final stages of Q School at TPC Sawgrass Valley Course, which... We know kind of well. They're playing there and at Sawgrass Country Club right across the street, which, as we found out when we were at Sawgrass, is where they wanted to buy Sawgrass Country Club.
That's a nice little nugget there.
So they built TPC Sawgrass instead. So they'll be doing 72 holes across both courses Thursday through Sunday. Top players get a PGA Tour card.
So that's what it's all about. Changes your life instantly. Basically, if so facto, makes you a millionaire. If you can just keep your card for one season on tour, you're a millionaire. It's amazing.
That's right. But all eyes will be on the PNC Championship, because Tiger and Charlie are playing. And guess what, Alex? Mm. They're not going to win.
Oh, hot take. Jeez.
Hot take. Yeah. Look, Charlie can be as good as he wants to be. Tiger just is not going to be able to play well enough to win this. I really hope Vijay and his son don't repeat. My money now, my money right now is on John, is on not John Team Daly. JD? Nah, you know, John Daly, maybe. But I'm actually going to go way off course here. And I'm going to say that my money is on Bernard Longer and his son, Jason.
That would be fun, actually. I mean, they've kind of contended in this event in recent years. I don't think they've won it in a few years, but I know he's won it with a different son, Bernard Longer has. So he's like, he's like trying to get the whole family a win in this tournament. So that could be something to watch. Yeah, the Team JD, obviously going to be one of the favorites. John Daly and John Daly Jr., always fun to watch. The Singhs do defend. As for Charlie, it sounds like you think that Charlie is going to be carrying dad this week in the father-son.
I think he's been carrying dad for the last couple of years here. This is only their fourth time playing in this event, but I feel like Charlie's been carrying Tiger for 4 years. So
yeah, so and just so people don't know, Charlie Woods, son of Tiger, he's now a high schooler. Team won the high school state championship. We follow this kid like he's the second coming of Jesus Christ, because he's Tiger Woods' son. So there's a world of pressure on him. But he's carving out a very nice little junior career for himself. Tiger's been caddying for him, and this is kind of their annual fifth major. So it'll just be good to see Tiger out there with a smile on his face, and hopefully he gets through another 17 holes walking just fine.
All right, let's get to the turn and this week's guest. Alex, you mentioned that your visit to Lago Vista in Texas.
Yes, sir. Lago Vista, a.k.a. Lakeview. Yep,
that's right. During that visit, you found our next guest barbecue joint. And this guy also happens to be a former NFL star. It seems like we're hitting all the boxes here.
Is that not, that's not like the most typical like Alex guest for Course of Life, right? Yeah, so I was golfing and then I found this barbecue place with slot machines and interviewed a former NFL player. Like that is, that's the perfect definition for how we find guests on the show. But of course, I love the network that I've got here in Texas. And that's right, Cedric Griffin, former NFLer and national champion. Mike, I mean, this guy delivered some of the biggest hits in the NFL I remember, and we got to just chop it up with him and talk all things football and barbecue. It doesn't get much better than this.
That's right. We'll get to that conversation with Cedric Griffin in just a second. But first, let's talk to you about the Live Take app. This has become one of our favorite apps, I think, on our phone, Alex, because it's where you can go and tell the world what you think about something in the world of sports. You can argue it with somebody else like we do every week. And then you can let the internet validate or invalidate your opinion. And it just is either incredibly and totally a positive experience, or it's the worst thing in the world.
Correct. Yeah. It's feast or famine on the internet. The internet's ruthless. So that's the best part about Live Take, is it's ruthless in its own wonderful way. You get your take out, and then just the people out there, they view the take and they vote on it. So we see who's actually right and wrong. Not your little ecosystem and your little friends on the couch in your living room who always have the same opinions about everything. We throw our takes up there for everyone to see. Take a quick look, Mike, because I know that you and I, we had the golf rollback debate.
I can tell you, I got it right here. Are you for or against rolling back the golf ball? You were adamant that they should not do it, but the people agree with me. We should be rolling back the golf ball.
God, Jesus. Well, that annoys me, but I'm the only way to fight back is to get a win of my own this week. So everyone check out the Live Take app and download, because that's where you can find us debating in addition to the podcast.
That's right. We're on there at COL Podcast Michael, COL Podcast Alex. It's Live Take. Get it in your app store today and let your take be heard.
Next up, he's living right here in Central Texas, where I am. He's a 7-year NFL vet that was part of the University of Texas National Championship team from 2005. But I actually got connected to him through his barbecue. We'll get into that and more. It's Cedric Griffin joining us on the podcast. Cedric, welcome and hook 'em. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Alex. I appreciate you having me on. And it's always good to talk football and barbecue. So it's a good deal for sure.
Absolutely. The two staples here in Texas. I'm originally from the North, Cedric, but I've been in Texas 13 years. So that's long enough to know that football and barbecue will take you a long way in the state.
That's right. And I guess you Texan now, so you've been 13 years. That for sure gives you some credentials.
Thank you for counting that a little bit. I appreciate that. I wanted to specifically actually wait and chat with you, because I was hoping the Longhorns would get their shot in the Final Four and the 4-team playoff, and thankfully they did. The Horns selected as the 3 seed in the upcoming playoff. What was your initial reaction to seeing them get in the playoffs this past weekend?
I was pleased. I was happy. It's been a long time coming since we've been, 10-1, 11-1, whatever they are right now. I know they only lost one game. And that's always the key. Like we always talked about when I was playing, if as long as we beat Oklahoma, we're going to be playing for the next championship. But they lost to Oklahoma, but luckily, they beat Alabama and it had some pretty good, scheduled games in there. So, I was pleased. I'm happy. I'm happy that I get to continue to watch them play and play for championship possibly.
Absolutely. So I guess looking ahead to that game real quick before we talk about your career at Texas, the Texas defense from your DB's perspective against Michael Penix Jr., who's one of the Heisman finalists. We'll find out if he won that by the time this airs. But what do you think the keys are for that defense, mainly against a quarterback and offense like that?
I've been saying it all year, and they've been doing it, close, the latter part of the season is disrupting timing with the receivers and making it hard on the quarterback, for the receiver and the quarterback to be on time. That we got a great pass rush. We got a great run stop support on our team. So making teams one dimensional and then pressing guys at the line and making it, hard for the quarterback to stick the ball into those tight windows. I think that's going to be the key, is to get your hands on the receivers, bump them early, be aggressive, and stay on them all night.
Yeah,
I think that's really the key.
Definitely setting that tone for sure. So hopefully we see that early and often for the Horns defense as it pertains to this playoffs. I know when you played, it was a little bit different. It wasn't a 4-team. It's about to be a 12-team playoff. It was just straight up 1 versus 2. It was Texas versus USC. There probably couldn't be any more hype around that game than you could ever imagine for a college football game. But tell me a little bit about some of your favorite memories in the buildup to that game specifically.
Yeah, it was just the memories of just the off season, the preseason, just the guys. We built bonds. I tell people all the time, we went to movies and we had dinners together. We went out together. We did everything together. So we built up some camaraderie. And we knew each other. We knew we liked to do on the field. We knew if I was going to make a bad play, I know somebody was going to catch me over the top, one of my safeties. So we trusted one another. And I think that goes a long way in football, in team sports. If you have trust in your teammate, and you can pretty much play blind because you know your teammate's going to back you up if you make a mistake, and vice versa. You can back your teammate up if he makes a mistake or she makes a mistake. So that was our big deal going up from that USC game. We just had a really strong bond. We had team meetings, and the coaches allowed the players to speak up and talk about their experiences and talk about what's going on. So it was an open door policy Coach Brown had at that time. And it just, you know, it allowed us to be vulnerable and allowed us to, you know, to trust one another and depend on one another. And those are my fondest memories of just a brotherhood. You know, we did everything together that, you know, those 2 years.
Yeah,
from back-to-back Rose Bowls.
That was an unbelievable way to cap it off. Obviously, one of the most highlight-filled games in college football history. And honestly, I don't know how much you travel through the Austin airport, but they just have that game on repeat at the Austin airport gift shop. You ever see that walking by when you're flying somewhere?
I have. I get random texts and calls from people saying they see the game and they seeing a little snippet of me running across the screen and stuff like that. So. It's good. It's good to be kind of memorized like that because it's on nonstop repeat on the Longhorn Network and like you say in the airport as well. So it still feels good to kind of you know be out there in people's minds. So it's a good deal.
There's a lot of highlight plays I mentioned in that game. The one that's sticking out for you, though, Cedric, is that hit that you delivered down the sidelines on Reggie Bush. Tell everyone what you kind of saw in that play specifically.
Yeah, so I mean, I believe that play we was in like a two read or a cover four, and it kind of it was man to man. If I had one receiver to my side, and then I could peel off. So I believe I had my man going across the field, and I seen Reggie slipping out. I knew Drew; he was our safety at the time. Drew was responsible for anybody kicking out or doing a real route. So I just kind of spent off my man. I seen the ball was being thrown, and I just went over there and tried to lay a big hit. That was my role, you know, in our defense. You know, I was good in man coverage. I was good in bump and run coverage. So I was a guy that was always kind of disrupting timing. But then I also was that kind of that, as Coach McKenna called it, the big bad wolf in the middle. I didn't mind hitting people. You know, I didn't mind putting my body in danger. And kind of setting that tone, you know, for our team, and our team responded, you know, every time I had a big hit or, we made something happen on defense. So I think, you know, honestly, you know, we, you know, it's an old saying, right? Cliche, right? Oh, defense to win championships, but I think that's very true. The offense scores points, but if we don't allow any points to be scored, you know, that's how we win games. And if we intimidate the other guys, right? That's also how we win games because they're not going to be running the offense in full steam.
Yeah, you got that necessary stop and those stops against the USC offense when it mattered, man. You were a big part of that game. And obviously, your energy was infectious on the field and it showed. And that winning moment when you see VY get to the corner and the clock hit zeros, what was the thought when the win was complete? Who were you thinking of in that moment, a championship victory?
Man, I don't know who I was thinking of, but I was just glad that, you know, that we won because coming into Texas, I told Coach Brown on my recruiting trip that I picked the University of Texas because I seen a bunch of other 4 and 5 stars coming to Texas, and I wanted to compete. I wanted to be around the best to get myself better, and I told him that I wanted to win a championship here, and that's the only reason why I came to Texas because I thought, you know, it was some good recruits coming out that year, and you know, to finally actually, like, you know, put my word and our game together and come out with a victory in a national championship my senior year was just awesome. It felt wonderful. It was very, very gratifying because, you know, you put all that hard work in, you put all those statements, you know, on paper or in the air or you know towards your teammates and your coaches, and then you come through with it. So it was good. I mean, it was a wonderful wonderful victory. And we have that memory forever. So it's something that we can always, like you say, go back and watch and review it and just have that memory forever for life.
Yeah, that path from beginning to end in your journey in Austin as a Longhorn is definitely a great story, and it continued through to your pro career as well, too. You worked through adversity in your rookie season and broke through in your second season, and you allowed the Vikings to make a long-term commitment to you. Tell me a little bit about how you kind of handled the adversity throughout your NFL career to keep going for seven seasons.
Yeah, I mean, the first year is your rookie year. I mean, every rookie is going to go through some adversity, whether, you know, you've been a starter for like myself for 4 years at Texas, and then I go to, you know, the Minnesota, and I was on special team duty, you know, for the first 3, 4, 5 games. But, you know, I stuck out, and I kept, you know, playing with my hair on fire. And just was, you know, I was in the weight room, I was in the film room, just kind of trying to figure out how to get on the field. And I finally made that breakthrough. I think the Green Bay game, the second Green Bay game we played, I think week 9 or week 10. And from that week, I started the rest of my career. And it wasn't really adversity, but it was just the fact that you just had to put your head down and just go to work and treat it as a business and know there was other guys that was coming in or guys that was there that was trying to take your job back from you. So you just had to be about your business. You had to find a routine and you had to stay in a routine. And then I think, you know, after my big contract, I think I tore my ACL and that was in an NFC championship game, one game away from the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I remember.
And so that was really, really tough because, you know, we were so close. And then I had a whole offseason just kind of think about losing championship game and tearing my ACL. So just rehabbing from that just was, you know, it was hard because that was my first real injury. But I took it in stride and I came back and, you know, in 6 months, and regained my starting position. And then, you know, I think the third week of the 2010 season, I ended up tearing my other ACL. So I just got the injury bug, back to back. And, I loved football enough to where I just wanted to, you know, continue to commit, you know, to the Minnesota Vikings and commit to myself and commit to my family, to rehab and get back in shape and do the necessary things, in which I did. I got back healthy again, regained my starting position again, and went from there. I think my last year with the Vikings was, you know, in 2012, I asked for my release because things just wasn't going right. There was a coaching change. And, you know, I had to move on from that situation. And I went to Washington, D.C., and finished up my last year there with Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan and some good coaches over there.
That was the beginning of a really great coaching tree that we see now in the NFL, yeah.
Yeah, Sean McVay. I mean, it was a bunch of guys over there, to be honest with you, that was just kind of just running scout team and Kyle was a coordinator there, but it was just a good deal, man. I've been around some good people. I've been around some tough situations, learned from every one of those situations, and I apply it to my life now. I apply it to the way I coach kids and teach kids and raise my own kids. So, and I love sports, and because sports is all about adversity. You know, it's always going to be some ups and downs. It's never going to be a straight up shot. And if you always think it's going to be straight up shot, that's when it comes down on you. So, you just got to be ready for the unexpected, man. You got to train for the unexpected. And you just got to, you know, train, you know, to be a winner. And that's kind of what I steal in my kids, my coach, and the kids I coach, is whatever we do, we're going to do it to the best of our ability. And we're going to be excellent in doing that. And if we do all those things, you know, most likely, you know, we're going to have a victory somewhere along the line.
Very well said, indeed, man. I really appreciate you encapsulating the career. You speak honestly, and he's being humble out there. Cedric Griffin has a cold collection of highlights on YouTube from his career, both with Minnesota and Washington. I wanted to just touch on a couple of highlights before we get to your coaching and barbecue talk here. I want to ask quickly, toughest wide receiver matchup you had in the league in 7 years?
Yeah, that question gets asked to me, and I would say my rookie year Torrey Holt.
Yep.
I was a rookie, obviously. He was a veteran, so he knew all the moves. And he was smaller than me, and he was shifty. I think he got me, you know, my rookie year because I couldn't get my hands on him, and that was my big deal. My big deal was always I was good presser, and I was really good for just. matching up with anybody because I was quick with my hands, and I had really good speed, so I can stay with them, you know, even if they got me at the line. But he didn't go off, you know, for a bunch of yards.
Okay, good.
I couldn't press him, and that's what got me upset.
Right.
The guy who got a lot of yards on me one day out of nowhere was Anthony Gonzalez, a wide receiver from Ohio State, I think.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
And we played the Colts, and I just didn't take the guy serious. And I'll just be completely honest with you. I didn't watch film on the guy. I just, you know, Anthony Gonzalez, who is that guy? I remember watching him in the Holiday Bowl against Texas the previous year. And I really didn't think nothing of it, but I think he was doing our DB then. And I just kind of just overlooked him. And man, he but came in and I'm sure he got about 8 receptions on me, about 100 yards on me. And that's the first game I can remember, like a receiver going over 100 yards. I can't really remember too many receivers getting 100 yards on me. But that guy right there for sure, got 100 yards and he was just routing me up, man. He was quick up the line. And I didn't study him. You know, I went out there to, you know, just being athletic, but in the league, everyone is just like you. And if you're not prepared and if you don't take everybody serious, you know, they're gonna make a clown out of you for sure.
That's a good lesson. Yeah. Good lesson in preparation for sure.
Oh, no question.
Yeah. Love that. So you had one specialty for sure, which I want to touch on, which is known in the stats category as the FF, the forced fumble. I want to ask what you had many of them in your career. There's a lot of highlights on there. What's your favorite forced fumble from your career?
There's one
against the Saints and Marcus Colston that came to my mind from my memory. If you want to jog us on that.
I think I was at Washington on that game or no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end.
That was a pretty good one because if he catches that ball and get that yardage, I mean, they're right there in scoring position for sure. And that's a different game. But I think we only beat them by like 3 or 4 points, in that game. And it came down to Hail Mary, the very end of the game. And they didn't complete that. So, that probably was a pretty good one as well, but I took joy in all my forced fumbles. I mean, for me, I don't have one highlight thing that I did over my career. I really enjoyed playing football that I just enjoyed my whole career. And I didn't really try to savor one specific play. Cause I love hitting. I love getting interceptions. I love covering my guy. I just love playing football and practicing and all that stuff. So, it wasn't just one moment of my forced fumbles, but I made it a fact to make sure I went after that ball all the time. And I got that from high school, honestly. Like, we practiced that so much in high school, just getting the ball out, you know, just the hammer, the rip, and then the punch. We were doing that back in 99, 2000, 2001.
Love that.
You know, my coach Randall. And that just stuck with me because I started doing that at Texas. As soon as I got to Texas, I would always rap and punch. I always rake. I always, you know, do a hammer when I made a tackle. And like I said, man, I was a kamikaze. I just went in there and just delivered blows. And I did, you know, I love hitting, man. I didn't have no fear about my body, you know. And I think when you play fast and you don't have any fear, I think that's when you make the most plays. When you're trying to guess and time everything up, you know, you make a lot of mistakes and you miss tackles. So I would just, you know, I would always fly in there and get what I need to get.
I like the rake and the hammer. I like those terms. Yeah. I haven't heard those enough. I appreciate that. So yeah, post-career, you mentioned it a little earlier, but I want to hear, Cedric, about your coaching. And that's actually when I connected with your friends and your colleagues at Smokehouse there, they talked a lot about your coaching. But tell me a little bit about how you're inspiring the youth here in Central Texas and coaching right now.
Yeah, man. So track is a passion of mine. I didn't run in college. I wish I would have, you know, just looking back on it. But track was the first sport I participated in when I moved to Texas from Mississippi. And it gave me my foundation of stretching, being disciplined, and learning how to compete and being a winner. Because when I first got to Texas, I went to the Junior Olympics in Minnesota, ironically, right? And I got 8th overall in the 400.
Okay.
As a 9-year-old. And from that moment, I knew I was good. I knew I could win. I knew I could compete, and I knew I could beat people. And that gave me so much confidence going into just everything that I did in life and in football and sports. And I was always confident in my speed, confident in my skill set. And so that's why now I coach track, because track runs through every single last sport that you got. You need to be fast, you need to be explosive, and you need to be able to jump. You need to have power in all sports. And track, you know, they it has that in every aspect, for high jump, for long jump, for the 400, for the 100, for the 200. And if you learn how to run those races, if you learn how to train, you learn how to eat the right things, get sleep, prepare your body, get mentally up for, you know, for competition, learn the psychological, game of it. It will help you in everything else. And I think I wasn't afraid of big moments. I wasn't afraid of competition. I wasn't afraid of speed because I seen it. I seen it all. And I ran track all through my youth career. So I love coaching. And I believe in it. I believe in it. I can teach somebody some speed. I can help them in their other sports. So that's what I do now. I have a track club called North Shore Stars, and we're out here in Laga Vista. And I get kids coming from Marble Falls, from Burnett, from Round Rock, from Cedar Park.
Very cool.
And they come in and I train them. I got a couple other coaches now. Finally, hopefully, I get some more, but. For a long time, it was just me coaching, you know, 20, 25 kids at one time. But I went to school, you know, and for education. I got a little major in applied learning. And what that is just kind of organization skills. I was good at just kind of coming up with lesson plans and organizing, my classes or organizing my sports as far as my practices. So I always had a game plan when I had more kids than I can handle, and I made it work. And I have a lot of kids that went on to nationals and got medals and ran some really, really good PRs and are in their tops in their field and in other sports, you know, when they leave me. So it's a passion of mine, man. And so I wish and hope that I can be that 6-year-old coach, you know, for youth sports that's out there coaching track and keep learning some good nuggets out there from other coaches out there.
Now it's great to hear what you're doing, North Shore Stars. That's really cool. And I like what you said about how the athletic requirements for track really do carry over to a lot of other sports, and it could build confidence for kids who are playing other sports to do track as well, too. Very well said.
Yeah.
So coaching by day and then barbecue by night is how I first got in touch with you. I got to hear about just your earliest barbecue memories, and let's give some context for our national audience here, Cedric. I know what it's like barbecue in Central Texas, but where I grew up in New England, barbecue was some sad hot dogs and hamburgers in a charcoal grill that are done in 15 minutes, but it's a whole different game down here. So explain how you kind of first got introduced to barbecue, being from the South and smoking meat.
Well, I have one of my coaches on our track club. His name is Daniel Clements. He is from California, and he said the same thing. He said he went to a barbecue. Well, he had a barbecue and invited some of his Texas friends, you know, in the area of Laga Vista here, and they kind of made fun of him because he said the exact same thing what you said. He had hot dogs, hamburgers, and I think some chips.
Chips, Cedric.
Yeah, and he just, I'm like, that's not barbecue, man. Like that's, I don't know what that is. That's, you know, you put hot dog, in a pot and boil them. That's not barbecue. Hamburgers and hot dogs. But I mean, I've been barbecuing and cooking for a long time. I met a guy named Jerome. He's from the east side of Austin. And that's kind of where I got my cook from, honestly. I learned how to, make a seasoning from Jerome. I learned how to cook my briskets, my ribs, my pulled pork, my beef ribs. I learned everything about barbecue. The smoker, from Jerome. And that was, back in 2007, 2008 when I first met him. And I bought my first pit in 2009. And we, late nights, during the off season, I come back to Austin and, after late nights, at the club or whatnot or hanging out throughout the day, I will go home. I invite friends over and we cooked all night. We'll cook everything. We cook grits on the grill, chicken, steaks, hamburgers, just about everything.
Love that.
And I just got in good with Jerome. And I Jerome was passionate about opening up a little food trailer. So I kind of helped him open up a food trailer. And then we got that started, got that running since 2015. So we run that downtown and on the east side of Austin. And so now I kind of cut off from him and kind of let him do his thing now. And I kind of know the brand of his food and his seasoning. And with his blessing, obviously, I went off and introduced his cooking to Brandon, who I'm working with now at the Smokehouse Cantina out here in Laga Vista. And we're doing now a Tex-Mex barbecue infused dishes, and it's working out pretty dang on well. Jerome brisket, which is now our brisket, right? I mean, it's flavored. It's not just salt and pepper, you know. It's not just salt and pepper and serve it to your customers. We put different flavors, different seasons in there, and we cook a certain way to where it comes out, you know, more tender than anybody brisket around here. And I promise you that. But we just we have passion, we have love for our food. I sit right there by that smoker, right there by the hot box when I'm cooking my food, man. And I shoot it like football, man. I shoot like a passion. I want it to be perfect. I want it to be the best. And for me, I love serving, man. I love helping people. I love trying to give my all. And if someone can't, do something, I want to find a way to help them. So it goes to my food. Like when I'm serving somebody my brisket, like I want to make sure that's the best brisket they ever had. So I'm making sure that I'm taking my time. I'm not overcooking it. I'm spending the right amount of time with it. I'm seasoning the right way. So it's, for me, it's an art. It's just like me learning how to press, how to jam, how to tackle, how to hit, how to force those fumbles. Everything that I do, I'm gonna be 100 involved in it, and I'm gonna try to do it to the best of my ability, because I know if I give it to somebody, they're gonna be rating me. You know, they're gonna say, oh, well, that's 8, that's 9, that's 5. I want a 10 every time, someone touched that barbecue. and that's tough, but I'm a competitor, man. And, I'm an ex, professional, ball player. So I take my competitiveness and I try to find the next thing, which is, for me, coaching right now and cooking. And I'm going to try to be the best of those two right now on a small level, obviously.
Well said. Yeah. So I put some Instagram content up from my visit. I went to Smokehouse a couple weeks back. Later this week, I'm going to be dropping a video with my full review there. So I talked to Brandon and Carla. I played the slot. That's going to be an awesome video experience for our YouTube audience as well, too. So I had the brisket tacos, the street taco version, and I had the street corn as well too. I'm not going to give away my review. I'll tell you after we're done with the interview. So we're going to let our audience wait on that. They were amazing though. I'm curious. I'll shoot my shot real quick on the details. How much of the recipe for the seasoning? How much is secret? How much is public? What can you say? What can't you say?
Well, I mean, the seasoning, I mean, it's a red seasoning. It's some type of pepper, some type of red peppers in there.
That's one hint. Okay.
That's one hint, right? There's also, some type of fruit juices in there as well, and I'm saying some type of yellow fruit juice.
Okay.
That goes in there as well. So, and then, we like to make it sweet in there as well. So we add a little sweetness and sour, a little hotness in there. So it has all the elements of some good flavor, man, to be honest with you. So I don't like talking about my flavor, because you give that flavor away and you find somebody who know how to really cook like myself, you can't stop them after that.
Now you gave him a couple breadcrumbs. Yeah. It's okay. You gave him a couple hints.
So, but I won't do it. One reason why, because that's not my recipe to give away. It's Jerome's, it's his family recipe. I won't give it to Brandon, or even if we end up, getting big with this, I'm going to have to always make that seasoning and just have it made for somebody who's going to come in and cook for us if it gets big like that. So I can't give it away, because it's Jerome's, and, it's a damn good recipe, honestly. So, it's where we get that flavor from, man, honestly. So
love it. I had to ask for the people out there. I appreciate the answer though.
I can't do it. we've been thinking about bottling it up and selling it, but
one day
it's a good season, man, for sure.
Very cool. Again, it's the Smokehouse Cantina. You can follow along on Instagram, check out the food for yourself. If you want to start salivating, make your way out to Central Texas in Laga Vista here and try Cedric's barbecue. Let's do just a few quick questions before we wrap up here. You're out in Lago Vista. It's Lake View, quite literally by name and definition. So this is a water question for you, Cedric, on a day off. Are you doing a pool party or are you going a day on the boat on the lake? What's your choice?
Yeah, so my kids, they like the pools. I'm a lake guy myself, so we like to get on the boats, on the pontoons, and tie up sometimes. And back in my heyday, we used to always be out there on a boat in our boathouses, and just getting down and having fun for sure. And that was some good times. But now it's more of just kind of cruising with the kids. You know, sometimes the kids' friends. And we get in the pontoons and we just cruise around. I let the kids drive around. So it's more lake for me for sure. I'm not gonna live out here at night being in the water. I love the water. So it's the pool is kind of nonsense to me, honestly. If you're thinking about it, so I go straight to the lake.
All right.
Than the pool.
Lake life all day. Love it. Okay. And then coming up, we got holidays. We got Christmas. We got New Year. We got a lot of big football games to celebrate, yeah, too. I'm curious, do you have annual traditions around the holidays? Do you have specific meals or specific meats you make around the holiday season?
Nah, I don't have any traditions. I need to get into some traditions, some family football traditions. But when football comes on, I'm a 49ers fan, from childhood. Okay. Kyle Shanahan is over there too as well right now, so ex-teammate. So I'm all about the 49ers, all about them. So I make sure that I watch that game every Sunday, and I try to get to them. But I need to go to a Christmas game of the 49ers, one year, so I'll probably make another tradition. But as far as the meats, if the boys want my boys, they love my ribs. So I make ribs for them anytime they want those. So usually around the holidays is when I start making ribs for them.
Love it. Sounds like a plan. Yeah. All right. Ribs it is for the holidays. Cedric, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life, man. Appreciate hearing your stories from football, coaching, and we'll be back to try more of the barbecue at Smokehouse as well. Thanks again.
Man, Alex, I appreciate you having me on and kind of shining some light on the Smokehouse Cantina out there here in Lago Vista. And if anybody's around, the Lago Vista area, Austin surrounding areas, it's a quick trip down 183 to 1431 West. Come on down and show some love and support to Texas X.
Course of Life podcast is brought to you by Zencastr. We've been using Zencastr here since almost the very beginning as how Alex and I record this podcast from hundreds of miles away. And it provides us with great quality audio that works every time. And it's something that makes Course of Life what it is and has kept us being able to make consistent episodes every week. And now it's super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. You log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. You record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. You feel a sense of zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. And have you ever wondered what you actually sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. Head on over to zencastr.com/pricing and use our promo code COURSEOFLIFE to get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same easy experiences we do for all of your podcasting and content needs. Again, that's zencastr.com/pricing and our promo code Course of Life. Zencastr, it's time to share your story. We're back. Great chat there with Cedric. Love to hear that he's living what could be everyone's best life right now.
Yeah, that's a good post-retirement vibe for an NFLer like Cedric Griffin. Coaching the kids up, got the beautiful Lakeview life and barbecue. Because of course, when you're in Texas, you're into barbecue. And yeah. I got to say, I won't spoil too much from the video. It comes out Friday again on YouTube. I had what may be a top five taco ever in Austin. And that's huge, huge praise. And it came from his barbecued meats. So check that out in the video coming out this Friday. But it was an honor to have his barbecue. Chop it up about the national champion too. National champion, NFLer. And I got to say, now that we're posting these hits from Cedric's career, you know, Mike, I know the concussions, you know, are a real thing. You know, we're trying to be safe out there. But boy, that old NFL, when you could just lay somebody flat on the ground. I miss that brand of football. So it was good to relive the glory days from Cedric's highlight reel on YouTube if you want to do that as well.
And if you like that conversation with Cedric, plus everything else we do here on this podcast, make sure you punch that subscribe button. Leave us a rating of a exponentially increasing number of stars. Leave us a review if you feel so inclined, telling us how great we are or how horrible we are. That's okay too. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads, COL Podcast, Course of Life, Alex, MWRINC. We're on Twitter/X2. Well, you're on Twitter. I'm not over there. I'm not doing anything over there anymore.
It's
I'm sorry, crazy
over there. You're not missing much, but it's still just as crazy as you remember it.
That's right. He's Course of Life 1 on Twitter/X. Of course, we're on YouTube. We talk about it all the time now. COL Podcast, Course of Life Podcast over there. Just search us and you'll find us. Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio. If you're not following us on one of those apps to get your podcast, if you're listening on your own podcast app, you can do that too. And of course, there's Always End With Food. That's where we post all of our food stuff as well. Like these amazing tacos that Alex is talking about.
Yes, yes, sir.
So make sure you check that out. Let's get into the back nine, Alex, and let's talk basketball. It's been a while since we've talked basketball. That's because it was the in-season tournament, the NBA Cup in Las Vegas in the Sphere. Yep. The Lakers and LeBron James won it. Do we care?
Another title for the LeBron fans out there, basically. I think they count this one with the bubble championship, too. You know, this probably counts the same for the LeBron fans out there. In a word, I don't care that the Lakers won, but the spectacle itself went off without a hitch and did seem to be a success. It had me, the casual NBA Celtics fan, drawn into some regular season games I normally wouldn't have been. So for that purpose, it was nice. And obviously for those NBAers who make it to the Final Four, they get that free partying weekend out in Vegas. You can't put a price on that if you're in the NBA. So
yeah, and I think I heard that the NBA actually had a bigger bonus pool of cash available for the NBA Cup than they do have for the NBA Finals.
Yes, I believe that. And I could tell when the Pacers beat the Celtics to get to the Final Four, how much they all needed that bonus on the team. I know these guys are living well, but they were after that money. So when the motivation's right and Vegas is on the line, you can get some great basketball. So overall, while I would love to poo-poo LeBron James, and I do so at any corner because of our past rivalries as a Celtics fan, It's probably a little bit of a notch in his belt that they won the first. So shout out to the Lakers for getting it done in Vegas.
All right, let's talk college football. Of course, last week, you and Diane talked about the Michigan, Alabama, Washington, Texas Final Four.
Yeah, the Horns, they made it in. We weren't sure if they were going to here in Austin, but big win in the Big 12 championship game. So we're all just looking forward to New Year's Day for those two semifinals. And we can finally say it. I don't think I've ever been able to say in the history of this podcast, Texas is back. I haven't been able to say that, but Texas is back.
You kept wanting to say it, but you just couldn't say it. So
they're back.
My question, though, is, and this is where I'm struggling as someone who's currently living in the state of Georgia, where the two-time defending champions reside.
Yes.
You lose to Alabama and you get kicked out because of that one game.
Tough draws for Georgia in that spot. You know, losing one game in 3 years and not being part of this playoff. I know they're just looking at this year's report card. And then Florida State going unbeaten. They lost their star quarterback, but they did everything they could. They won every game on the schedule and won their conference, and they weren't in either. So a very tricky 14 playoff to get in. But again, it's the last one. We expand to 12 teams next season. So anyone who's griping right now, the gripe's over. And 12 teams will be in.
No, we're still going to gripe next year about team 13 and 14 that didn't get in.
So I'm going to be bickering about why Liberty got in over James Madison in the number 12 spot next year. I can't wait for that.
Let's face it. It's going to be the entirety of the SEC. yes. and then a couple other teams in this. So
yes,
more realistically. That's going to be the playoffs now.
Yeah.
So bowl season is here, 42 games.
Yes, and Mike, I had the job of writing, thanks to my friends at Splash Sports, I had to come up with an original thought for every single one. How's that for a tough piece to write?
which game was the hardest? Was it the Georgia Southern game?
Yeah, right. Georgia Southern, your Eagles are leading off bowl season, freaking 11 yeah. o'clock in the morning on Saturday. The famous Toastery Bowl. That's a tricky one to come up with a lot. That's a new bowl sponsor alert right there. God, we got all sorts of avocados from Mexico Bowl. There's all sorts of random ones on your schedule, but just know that bowl mania is about to commence, starting bright and early on Saturday.
Look, the one I just always remember is the Hawaii Bowl late on Christmas Eve, typically.
Are you ready for me to break your heart?
Oh, no.
The Hawaii Bowl has moved from Christmas Eve, 8 p.m., to Festivus, 10:30 at night. How horrible is that?
That's atrocious.
I know. I'm just as offended as you are.
Ugh.
Yep,
I know. Festivus should have no football games going on. That is so anti-Festivus in every way.
And a good tease to remind you, well, maybe we should get in a little airing of Grievous next week, but we'll do the official Festivus wrap episode in 2 weeks for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we will indeed. All right, let's talk the NFL because, Alex, how are you feeling? Your Patriots won a football game, man. Look
not,
at that.
Not one. Not two, but three touchdowns.
Wow.
In one game. Oh, yeah, they did that all in one game. I forgot to say that. That's an important caveat.
After losing, what, three games in the season and allowing the other team to score 10 points or less, the first time that's ever happened in the NFL.
Amazingly bad is the way I like to put that stat line right there for the Pats defense. But yes, the Patriots get their third win, or still lined up to maybe get that number two pick in the draft. Giants are Monday night, so we won't comment there. But overall, just, you know, living life in the cellar. You got to take all these wins when you can get them, Mike. I'm getting it now. The wins are few and far between. So when they do happen, you really do need to celebrate them. You really do.
Speaking of wins to celebrate, let's talk baseball real fast, because the Ohtani sweepstakes is over. He's going to the Dodgers for $700 million over 10 years. The highest paid athlete in American sports. Well, more than John Rahm is getting paid by Piff.
Oh, so nice dig.
Figure that one out. And his annual salary of $70 million a year will be more than the opening day payroll of several teams from last year, including the Orioles and the A's. I think you could put the A's twice into Ohtani's contract.
Several teams, as in the entire team's payroll. Is what you're getting at there. Just
the entire team's
that.
Opening day payroll is less than what Ohtani will make in 1 year.
Absolutely absurd. Ohtani, you know, not even going to pitch this upcoming season because of the injury. Yeah. So you're getting him just as a hitter for year one. But the Dodgers are just that team now, Mike. Honestly, the Dodgers are taking all those Yankees versus Red Sox free agency vibes that you and I have known for so long. They just get all the big fish these days.
And then they lose in the postseason.
Mm, yep. Well, it's the irony of baseball.
Very Yankees from the 2010s.
Interesting how that does work. Yes. Shout out Shohei Ohtani, man. Got every single last dollar he could have there. Well done.
It's just crazy. But for now, let's hashtag always end with food.
Yep. Always end with food on Instagram. It's our 19th hole here, wrapping up the podcast. And it was date night this past weekend. You're going to love this deal. Because I know you love a good deal and you love a good date night experience, okay?
Yep.
So this is DeLuca Gaucho. It is a Rodizio style pizza experience. So basically think, you know, you're going to a upscale pizza place where you sit down, nice sit down restaurant, but you're getting served like it's Fogo de Chao. So it's just endless pizza coming around and around and around. So it's endless pizza, savory and dessert pizzas, I mind you, endless salad. Lobster bisque soup, side of meatballs, $24.95 per person. How great is that deal?
Unlimited? Like you can just sit there and eat till you die? Or
forever. Forever.
Oh, wow.
They would not stop bringing the pizzas. I saw every single one on the menu with the exception of about one go by our table. Probably had at least 6 or 7 slices. And then the banana flambe pizza, the Nutella pizza. I mean... they pull out all the stops there. So if you're looking for an interesting experience in Austin, or if or just in any city where you are, if you can find a Rodizio style pizza experience, basically think you're going to Fogo de Chao, except it's just an endless carousel of pizza. It was an amazing date night.
I need to pick myself off the floor after that.
Yeah, seriously.
that whole story.
Did I mention
there,
I gained 10 crazy. Pounds since last episode as well, too?
I would think you would have done it just in that one sitting in that restaurant. Yeah. That good thing you're not lactose intolerant, right?
That's right, yeah.
did you have your date night during Hanukkah? Did it start Thursday night or later during Hanukkah?
Yeah, third night, boss. It was night three. Yeah, we're by the time our audience is hearing this, we're on the final nights of Hanukkah here.
We are. We're in the home stretch of the eight crazy nights, and of course that meant it was that one time a year when I bust out the grater and we make some potato latkes because you gotta make latkes. You gotta fry stuff for Hanukkah. You gotta fry stuff. That's what we do because the oil lasted for 8 days instead of just one. So you fry some stuff. So we had latkes, and the new way to eat latkes, which I've never really done before, and we finally did it: little sour cream and a slice of smoked salmon. Fantastic.
Oh, whoa. I thought you were going to go like in a nacho direction when you said sour cream, but you said salmon too. Wow.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of like the traditional is latkes and applesauce.
Very traditional.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of that.
Surprise.
Sour cream, I can get on board with all day. But this year I was like, you know what? You keep seeing these things out there where you do smoked salmon on it too. So put a little smoked salmon on there. Makes it real bougie, you know?
Love that. So tip that of the was, day right great. There. Smoked salmon on the latke for Hanukkah. Happy holidays out there to everyone. That was Always End With Food and another wrap on a great Course of Life podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to like and subscribe right now as we sign off. We'll see you next week.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.